Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Tuesday, April 16, 2024. House Republican impeachment managers walk the articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas from the House to the Senate, where they are formally presented. The articles charge the secretary with willfully failing to enforce immigration and border security laws to prevent the wave of migrants, which have crossed the U.S.-Mexico border in recent years, and a breach of public trust by lying to Congress about whether the border is secure. The question now is whether the Senate will conduct a full impeachment trial, as most Republicans have called for, or quickly table or kill the articles, as many Democrats have been advocating. After a second House Republican, Thomas Massie, announced support of a motion to remove House Speaker Mike Johnson and calling on him to resign, the Speaker says he is not resigning and says it's an absurd notion that somebody would bring a motion to vacate, quote, when we are simply here trying to do our jobs. Congressman Massie is opposed to Speaker Johnson's plan to bring to the House floor a bill that would provide aid to Ukraine. The Supreme Court hears a case brought by a defendant in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, challenging his criminal charge of obstructing a congressional proceeding. And the decision in that case could affect some of the similar charges pending against former President Donald Trump. Donald Trump attends day two of jury selection in his hush money criminal case in New York City, and half a dozen jurors are seated and sworn in. And President Joe Biden campaigns for re-election in his hometown of Scranton, Pennsylvania, talking about tax code fairness. The 11 House impeachment managers walked the articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas from the House side of the U.S. Capitol to the U.S. Senate. You will hear on the Senate floor from the Senate President Pro Tem, Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington State, presiding, and the Acting House Clerk, Kevin McCumber, and the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms, Karen Gibson.
Mr. Clerk.
I've been directed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has agreed to House Resolution 995, a resolution appointing and authorizing impeachment managers for the impeachment trial of Alejandro Nicolas Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security.
The message will be received and the Senate takes notice of the action by the House.
Madam President and members of the Senate, I announce the presence of managers on the part of the House of Representatives to conduct proceedings on behalf of the House concerning the impeachment of Alejandro Nicolas Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security.
The managers on the part of the House will be received and escorted to the well of the Senate.
On the Senate floor today, the House Republican lawmakers who will serve as those impeachment managers were escorted to the well. They are Mark Green of Tennessee, Michael McCaul of Texas, Andy Biggs from Arizona, Ben Klein of Virginia, Andrew Gabardino of New York, Michael Guest of Mississippi, Harriet Hageman of Wyoming, Clay Higgins from Louisiana, Laurel Lee of Florida, August Pfluger of Texas, and Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia. We pick it up again with the presiding officer, Senator Murray.
The Sergeant-at-Arms will make the proclamation.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons are commanded to keep silent on pain of imprisonment while the House of Representatives is exhibiting to the Senate of the United States articles of impeachment against Alejandro Nicolas Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security.
The managers on the part of the House will proceed.
Mr. President, the managers on the part of the House of Representatives are present and ready to present the articles of impeachment, which have been preferred by the House of Representatives against Alejandro Nicolas Mayorkas, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security.
That's the lead House impeachment manager, Mark Green, Republican from Tennessee. He chairs the Homeland Security Committee. He went on to read on the Senate floor the two articles of impeachment against Secretary Mayorkas, both related to what the House Republicans say is his failure to enforce border and immigration laws with the migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. Article 1 accuses the secretary of willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law. Article 2 of breach of public trust. The senators will be sworn in as jurors on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Most Senate Republicans have demanded a full impeachment trial, but it's possible the majority Democrats will quickly vote to dismiss the charges. The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke on the Senate floor this morning ahead of the impeachment articles arriving.
As I have said repeatedly, we want to address this issue as expeditiously as possible. Impeachment should never be used to settle a policy agreement to a policy disagreement. Let me say that again. Impeachment should never be used to settle a policy disagreement. Talk about awful precedents. This would set an awful precedent for Congress. Every time there's a policy agreement in the House, they send it over here, tie the Senate in knots to do an impeachment trial. That's absurd. That's an abuse of the process. That is more chaos. Nevertheless, when the House is ready to send us the articles, the Senate will act.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, on the Senate floor this morning. And following him, the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, spoke and advocated for a full impeachment trial.
Today, the Senate will hear House managers charge Secretary Mayorkas with serious dereliction of duty, with a systematic refusal to enforce our nation's immigration laws, and with lying to Congress about the extent of the border crisis that unfolded on the Biden administration's watch. The facts of the crisis are well known. Since January of 2021, CBP has recorded more than 7.5 million illegal crossings at our southern border, while observers estimate over 1.5 million known gotaways. And last December saw the highest daily and monthly numbers ever recorded. In the 2 months since the House impeached Secretary Mayorkas, the border crisis has only continued, with excruciating consequences for innocent Americans. On February 22nd, an illegal alien was arrested in Virginia for sexually assaulting a minor. The very next day, another illegal alien from Venezuela was arrested for the murder of Lakin Riley, a young college student in Georgia. In the same month, yet another was charged with first and second degree murder for the shooting of a 2-year-old in Maryland. And for the Americans living right near the border, things are not improving. In February, one man working in Arizona recounted watching cartel guides lead over 170 people from around the world through one such opening in a matter of hours. The House managers will make the case for Secretary Mayorkas' role in neglecting and exacerbating that crisis. And as befits such a solemn and rare responsibility as convening a court of impeachment, I intend to give these charges my full and undivided attention. Of course, that would require that senators actually get the opportunity to hold a trial. And this is exactly what history and precedent dictate. Never before has the Senate agreed to a motion to table articles of impeachment, not for an officer of either party. Not once. Instead, every single time that we've been called upon to render judgment, we've done so. We've convened a trial or, in the accordance with Rule 11 of the impeachment rules agreed to in 1935, we've appointed a trial committee to dig into the facts and make a recommendation. It would be beneath the Senate's dignity to shrug off our clear responsibility and fail to give the charges we'll hear today the thorough consideration they deserve.
The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, today on the Senate floor. From an Associated Press article, senators will be sworn in Wednesday as jurors, turning the chamber into the court of impeachment. The Senate will then issue a summons to Secretary Mayorkas to inform him of the charges and ask for a written answer. He will not have to appear in the Senate. What happens after that is unclear. Impeachment rules generally allow the Senate to decide how to proceed. That from Associated Press. Secretary Mayorkas testified today before the House Homeland Security Committee. Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat from Texas, asked him about the impeachment articles.
I do want to address the question of dealing with the articles of impeachment, willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law. It's always difficult to ask someone to detail their own frailties. Do you believe, Mr. Secretary, that you have failed to comply with the law? And where would you do better in complying with the law on behalf of the American people?
Congresswoman, I've been in public service, I think, about 22 years. I've taken the oath, I think, five times, maybe six. I've adhered to the oath to which I have sworn, and I have abided by the law each and every step of the way.
When your question is asked over and over again, and this is for the American people, if you're still tuning in about whether the southern border is secure, they need that answer. And so I would ask the question, as someone who believes that you do the best with what you have and you work hard, and that we owe the American people the duty of a secure border, what more would you do if that was the question and the answer was that we need to do more? What more would you do to secure the American border if you felt that was necessary that you wanted to tell the American people this is what I needed to have?
Congresswoman, we are dealing with a fundamentally broken immigration system. That is our fundamental problem. And I would encourage Congress to pass a bipartisan Senate legislation that would bring tremendously advancing reform to the broken immigration system, and it would also resource our department to execute those reforms advantageously.
It seems a simple proposition to me, and throughout the entire questioning that I've decided to sit and listen, I've heard no offering of a resolution by my friends on the other side of the aisle. There is absolutely nothing to answer the second article of impeachment, breach of public trust. And that is that we know that Congress has the sole power of impeachment and that you shall be removed for the breach of trust. Then what is that breach? What is your belief is a breach of trust?
Congresswoman, I'm not aware of any. And let me assure you that I do not spend time on the impeachment proceedings. I focus my attention exclusively on the work of the Department of Homeland Security.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas questioned by Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat of Texas, at today's Homeland Security Committee hearing as the articles of impeachment as passed by the House were delivered to the Senate today, and the trial is going to begin this week. Secretary Mayorkas is only the second cabinet secretary to be impeached in U.S. history after William Belknap, former Secretary of War, in 1876. Story from CNN, a defiant House Speaker Mike Johnson, facing growing threats to his speakership, said Tuesday he is not resigning and dismissed threats to his gavel as absurd after a second Republican member of Congress threatened to oust Johnson for his handling of legislation to send foreign aid to Ukraine and Israel. After Republican Congressman Thomas Massie said he would co-sponsor an effort to oust Johnson from his job and called on him to resign, the Louisiana Republican described himself as a wartime speaker in challenging times. Thomas Massie posted on X today, "I just told Mike Johnson in conference that I am co-sponsoring the motion to vacate that was introduced by Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia. He should pre-announce his resignation as Boehner did so we can pick a new speaker without ever being without a GOP speaker. Friday, we have one less Republican in the majority as Congressman Gallagher leaves instead of finishing his term. As a going-away gift, Speaker Johnson plans to force the Senate to take up Gallagher's bill to ban TikTok and give presidential power to ban websites, but still no border. and a third post by Thomas Massie. Speaker Johnson has led the GOP to pass one, an omnibus that spends more than Pelosi's highest year, two, an expansion of the domestic warrantless surveillance program, and this week he's pushing three, Schumer's dream bill, which contains $100 billion of foreign aid, mostly for war. Those were the posts by Congressman Thomas Massie. He spoke to reporters outside that closed House Republican conference meeting this morning.
There's only one person right now who can stop us from going into what happened last fall, and that's Mike Johnson. He's cleaning the barn, that's obvious. He had three things to do. He wanted to do an omnibus that broke all the spending records. He wanted to do FISA without warrants, and I wants to do Ukraine. Those are the three things. There are people riding him like a horse here. They don't care when the horse collapses. I do, because it's going to throw our confidence into turmoil. If he would do what John Boehner did, when John Boehner had at least announced that he was cleaning the barn and said, I'm leaving, whatever it was, 8 weeks hence, or when you find somebody to replace me. If Speaker Johnson would do that, we could go without ever being speakerless, and we could be in control of it in the conference. But I'm afraid he is dead set, and the people who are pushing him are dead set on riding that horse until it collapses.
Congressman, can you clarify
to
exactly?
You want him to resign?
What
yes. Yeah, I asked him to resign.
When did you ask him to?
He said he would not. And then I said, well, you're the one who's going to put us into this. Because the motion is going to get called.
Okay.
Does anybody doubt that? The motion will get called. And then he's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy. And I have told him this in private, like, weeks ago. So, I mean,
when did you ask him to resign?
Right in there.
Just today.
So, Congressman, help us understand that. If he's not resigning, are then you going to push a motion to vacate this week?
No, I'm not going to call the motion to vacate. But I will tell you that if it is called, there will be a lot of people who vote for it.
How does a motion to vacate against Speaker Johnson help the country?
Some would say we'd be rudderless, but we have a rudder. We're steering everything toward what Chuck Schumer wants. There has not been a change. I mean, if the country likes Chuck Schumer, then they should like what Speaker Johnson's accomplished in the House.
Congressman Thomas Massie, Republican from Kentucky, meeting with reporters this morning after the closed private House Republican members' conference. A short time later, Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, held a formal news conference.
What is your response to Republicans who say this move should cost you your job and that if you don't resign, they will try to oust you?
I am not resigning, and it is, in my view, an absurd notion that someone would bring a vacate motion when we are simply here trying to do our jobs. It is not helpful to the cause. It is not helpful to the country. It has not helped the House Republicans advance our agenda, which is in the best interest of the American people here, a secure border, sound governance, and it's not helpful to the unity that we have in the body. Look, we have a very important mission here. Our mission is very clear. The reason most of us, I can speak for the House Republicans, the reason every House Republican ran for Congress is that because they wanted to come here and help to save this beleaguered republic of ours. We want to save the country. We believe that we're in an existential moment. We really do. This is a civilizational moment. It's a moment where we're going to decide in this election cycle which vision we have for the country. See, we believe, and y'all have heard me say before, we believe in the founding principles, the foundations of America, things like individual freedom and limited government and the rule of law and peace through strength and fiscal responsibility and free markets and human dignity, the foundational, the anchor points that make us the exceptional nation that we are. And right now we're in a political struggle, a battle between a completely different vision for the country. We have colleagues in the Congress who envision for us not those things. They have disdain for those things I just listed. They instead envision that America should be remade in the form of some sort of, you know, European-style socialist utopia. That is a dangerous fool's errand. That is a road to Marxism, communism, you know, socialism. That's a step towards those eventualities, and that is not who we are as a country. And so for us to accomplish our mission, which is to save the republic, we need to add more Republicans to the House and grow the House majority so we have more votes. We need to win back the Republican majority in the Senate, and we need to restore Donald J. Trump to the White House as our nominee. I believe all those things will happen. But we have to have a united front, and we have to have our members work together. And we'll be working today to do that very thing. Look, we are in We're in unprecedented times, okay? We're in dangerous times, as has been articulated here, around the world, and here at home. We need steady leadership. We need steady hands at the wheel. I regard myself as a wartime speaker. I mean, in a literal sense, we are. I knew that when I took the gavel. I didn't anticipate that this would be an easy path. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich posted a couple days ago on his social media that this is the hardest challenge that's faced a speaker probably in the history of the country, in the moment that we're in right now. He said arguably maybe comparable to the Civil War, but maybe worse. A single vote margin at a difficult time when the nation is terribly divided. The way we get through that is we show unity and we explain how we have answers to all these great challenges. We have those answers. We shouldn't get in the way of ourselves.
We're going to
work this out today, and we'll have a lot more comment for you today, for you later. But I'm going to tell you that I am not concerned about this. I am going to do my job, and I think that's what the American people...
Is there any upside to calling their bluff, Mr. Speaker?
House Speaker Mike Johnson at a news conference today. He mentioned the majority of the House Republicans going down to one. That'll happen after Congressman Mike Gallagher, Republican from Wisconsin, resigns on Friday. And with two House Republicans now saying that they will vote to remove Speaker Johnson, Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene, the math says that the Speaker will need some Democrats to help him stay Speaker should that motion come to the floor for a vote. The House Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar of California was asked at his news conference today what his party's plan is.
How would you handle a motion to vacate?
We don't like the chaos and the dysfunction. We've been down this road before, believe me. I mean, I provided a lion's share of those nomination speeches. I'm not itching to do that anymore. Look, we want this place to work. We want to see aid to Israel, Ukraine, humanitarian assistance, and INDOPACOM priorities. That's what we're focused on right now. We can't control the theatrics of Marjorie Taylor Greene and the House Republican Conference, but we stand willing to work with anyone who wants to deliver on that help and support.
On that same question, is there a world where, I know this might have sounded strange 10 years ago, but is there a world where if there's a motion to vacate triggered and the votes work out so that Hakeem Jeffries could become Speaker, that you all think it would be good to have a Democratic Speaker even with a technical Republican majority?
Look, I feel very confident speaking for the Democratic caucus that we want Hakeem Jeffries to be Speaker. Whether that happens in this calendar year or in January, that's the focus. Mathematically, it's possible, but right now we're just focused on this week ahead and ensuring that we provide the important support to Israel, Ukraine, humanitarian assistance for that region, as well as priorities in the Pacific. So that's the focus and the goal. But obviously, from a math perspective, we can't rule that out. It's nothing that we're spending a lot of time on right now.
Congressman Pete Aguilar, Democrat from California, the caucus chair at a news conference. Speaker Mike Johnson's plan is to bring up four separate bills dealing with foreign aid. Three would be for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific. And the fourth would have House Republican foreign affairs priorities, including paying for aid for Ukraine by seizing Russian assets, providing some aid as loans, and banning TikTok in the United States. CBS News writes, the speaker said he hoped the bill's text would be released Tuesday, and he'd then honor a 72-hour rule that gives lawmakers time to read legislation before a vote and allow amendments. If the measures survive the House Rules Committee, votes could take place as soon as Friday. That was from CBS News. White House spokesperson John Kirby was asked at a news conference on Air Force One today whether the president would accept the four bills.
John, yesterday I believe you said that you would, the president would not support a standalone bill. We see that Speaker Johnson is suggesting four standalone bills, I believe. Would you all be opposed to a series of standalone bills?
We don't support a standalone bill that only funds Israel, because Ukraine needs munitions too. Now look, I think we still have to see the speaker's proposal in more detail. The important thing is that the House moves this week to help us get security assistance for Israel, Ukraine, and also for the Indo-Pacific. They need to move this week. And as for the details, we'll wait and see what the speaker comes up
with. Okay with four bills?
Again, we're going to wait past judgment after we've had a chance to take a look closer at the speaker's proposal. The important thing is that our allies like Ukraine and Israel, who are under the gun, literally under the gun, get the security assistance they need as quickly as possible. So we want them to move this week.
And right now you're not sure on the details of the bills, if there's something the White House can support at this point.
I think we just need to see more right now. We need to see more than we have right now to be able to. It does appear at first blush that the Speaker's proposals will, in fact, help us get aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, and needed resources to the Indo-Pacific for a wide range of contingencies there. At first blush, it looks like that. We just want to get more detail.
Whether it's all together or separate is not a deal breaker for some.
Again, at first blush, looks like the Speaker's proposal does cover those immediate needs, and they are immediate needs, but we're waiting to get a little bit more detail before we say it one way or the other.
John Kirby, White House National Security Communications Advisor, at a news conference on Air Force One. Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi there. I'm Jonathan from C-SPAN, along with my colleague, Ben. Since C-SPAN's founding 45 years ago, the media world has changed. Remember when there were just a few TV channels? Now we've got streaming, social media, apps, and more.
Through all of this, C-SPAN has stayed true to its mission of giving you unfiltered access to government wherever you get your news. As we navigate this challenging media environment with fewer people subscribing to traditional cable packages, our funding has been impacted.
That's why we're asking for your help to keep going strong for another 45 years. Please donate today at cspan.org/donate. Your contribution, large or small, helps ensure at least another 45 years of witnessing democracy in action.
Keep C-SPAN thriving in today's ever-changing media landscape. Visit cspan.org/donate to make your gift today. Thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now mobile app and wherever you find your podcasts. Supreme Court justices on Tuesday, writes NBC News, raised concerns about the Justice Department's use of an obstruction statute to charge those involved in the January 6 attack on the U.S. Capitol. The case could have bearing on the election interference prosecution of former President Donald Trump. The justices heard an appeal brought by defendant Joseph Fisher, a former police officer who was seeking to dismiss a charge accusing him of obstructing an official proceeding, namely the certification by Congress of Joe Biden's election victory, which was disrupted by a mob of Trump supporters. The law in question criminalizes efforts to obstruct, influence, or impede any official proceeding. Conviction can result in a prison sentence of up to 20 years. The court, which has a 6-3 conservative majority, has in the past been skeptical of prosecutors when they assert broad applications of criminal provisions. Some justices expressed similar sentiments during Tuesday's arguments, asking whether the statute in question could be used to prosecute peaceful protesters, including people who at times have disrupted Supreme Court proceedings. That was the reporting by NBC News. Here's part of the oral argument in the case Fisher v. United States. U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar questioned by Justice Amy Coney Barrett.
Okay, let me ask you a question that kind of gets at some of the same points that Justice Alito's questions were getting at. So what if on January 6th, the Capitol itself had not been breached, the protest is going on outside the Capitol, stop the steal, stop the seal, police are, you know, in megaphones saying disperse, disperse, they're too close to the Capitol, their goal is to impair, impede, stop the proceeding, stop the counting of votes. Does that violate the statute in your view under this impede language?
So I think that one relevant question would be whether we could satisfy the nexus requirement and show that actually the natural and probable effect of that conduct would be to have some effect on what's going on in the Capitol and
yes,
in the
so
mind.
You can.
Yes. So if you're assuming that the same thing happened where Congress had to go into recess and couldn't hold the joint session after all because there was such a security risk, I think that that probably would be chargeable if we had the intent evidence. Now, as I mentioned before, even with respect to the riot that happened, which was a much more serious breach, we don't have that evidence of intent for everyone. But if we had, for example, organizers where it was absolutely clear that they were the ringleaders who had intended to obstruct and undertook the action with that specific intent and did so knowing it was wrongful, and especially if they went, you know, I'm assuming you're saying they're in the unauthorized area right outside the Capitol, that is unlawful conduct committed with consciousness of wrongdoing if we have the proof of it.
let's say that I am having a hard time seeing, like, accepting your limiting construction of the verbs obstruct, influence, or impedes to have this extra element. Tell me why I shouldn't be concerned about the breadth of the government's reading just relying on corruptly and the nexus requirement. Should I be concerned, or could you just embrace it and say, yeah, there might be some as-applied First Amendment challenges or that sort of thing? I mean, can I be comfortable with the breadth if that's what I think?
Yes, you can be. You certainly don't have to agree with us that a de minimis hindrance wouldn't qualify. If you thought that this was unqualified and swept broadly to any kind of hindrance whatsoever, there would still be really important limits in the statute. Obviously, you'd have to have the official proceeding. I think the nexus requirement could be somewhat harder to establish in a circumstance where you might not think that the natural and probable effect of the conduct is going to be to obstruct the proceeding. You'd have to show that the defendant knew that their natural and probable effect would do that. You'd still have to show the corruptly mens rea. And as you mentioned, even if you could show all of that, if it were a circumstance that really did infringe on First Amendment rights, there would always be the backstop of an as-applied constitutional challenge.
Do you think it's plausible that Congress would have written a statute that broadly? I mean, let's say that I think that Justice Alito's example of the protesters in the courtroom, you know, yeah. it's let's say it's corrupt. It impedes the proceeding because we have to go off the bench and things are stopped. Let's say I think that that's covered by the word impedes, and there's the nexus, and it's corruptly. Is it plausible to think Congress wrote a statute that would sweep that in?
Yes, I think that there are a lot of legitimate ways to try to voice your dissent if you disagree with what the court is doing, but one of the ways you cannot do it is come into this courtroom, halt the proceedings, force the justices to leave the bench, and do it with the intent and the corrupt mens rea. I think that Congress could think that is a severe intrusion on the functioning of our government and want to protect against that. And again, the 20-year statutory max, of course, is just a max. There's no mandatory minimum. So Congress would have recognized that sentencing courts would use their discretion to tailor the actual sentence to the facts of that specific offense.
Thank you.
Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett questioning U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar in today's oral argument in the case Fisher v. United States, challenging a criminal statute used to charge a defendant in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol of obstructing a congressional proceeding. The decision in this case could potentially affect some of the criminal charges related to the January 6, 2021 attack that are pending against former President Donald Trump, a 2024 Republican presidential candidate. You can find the full oral argument at our website, cspan.org. It runs about an hour and 40 minutes. Donald Trump was in New York City again today for the second day of his first criminal trial he's facing. He's accused of falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments to two women who say they had affairs with him. Donald Trump spoke for a couple of minutes before the proceedings began.
Thank you very much. This is a trial that should have never been brought. It's a trial that is being looked upon, looked at all over the world. They're looking at it and analyzing it. Every legal pundit, every legal scholar said this trial is a disgrace. We have a Trump-hating judge. We have a judge who shouldn't be on this case. He's totally conflicted, but this is a trial that should never happen. It should have been thrown out a long time ago. If you look at Jonathan Turley, Andy McCarthy, all great legal scholars, there's not one that we've been able to find that said this should be a trial. I was paying a lawyer and marked it down as a legal expense, some accountant, I didn't know, marked it down as a legal expense. That's exactly what it was. And you get indicted over that? I should be right now in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in many other states, North Carolina, Georgia, campaigning. This is all coming from the Biden White House because the guy can't put two sentences together. He can't campaign. They're using this in order to try and win an election. And it's not working that way. It's working the opposite way. So check that out. Legal expense. It's called legal expense. That's what you're supposed to call it.
Mr. Trump,
you get indicted on that. Nobody has ever seen anything like it. So thank you very much for coming. I am now going to sit down. The voters understand it. All you have to do is look at the polls. This is a shame trial. And the judge should recuse himself.
You know,
this is totally conflicted. Thank you very much.
What about the Republican Independence?
Donald Trump, former president and 2024 Republican presidential candidate, speaking to reporters outside the courtroom in New York City. Some updates on the jury selection in this case from USA Today. Six jurors have been selected to serve throughout Donald Trump's New York criminal hush money trial. All six were sworn in late Tuesday afternoon. 12 jurors plus several alternates are needed in total before the trial may get underway. And Judge Juan Merchan dismissed a potential juror who posted on social media a parody video generated by artificial intelligence that was titled "I'm as dumb as F" and featured Donald Trump. The potential juror also posted "No one is above the law" about Trump's separate criminal case over his handling of classified documents. And one more update from USA Today, the judge allowed another potential juror to continue after the Trump team took issue with her previous social media posts. Judge Merchan said the posts were satire and the prospective juror was fairly open about disagreeing with Trump's political views. From AFP, Joe Biden loves nothing more than peppering speeches with references to his blue-collar roots in Scranton, Pennsylvania. On Tuesday, his re-election campaign is taking him right to the heart of that political mythology with a hometown visit. The 81-year-old U.S. president will reach out to working and middle-class voters with an address in the former mining town, calling on the rich to pay more tax. More pointedly, the Democrat will draw a stark contrast with his Republican election rival, Donald Trump, the real estate tycoon who will be stuck in court on Tuesday as the first former president to face a criminal trial. That was the preview from AFP. Here's part of the speech today from President Joe Biden.
I learned a lot here in Scranton. I learned that money doesn't determine your worth. My grandfather would tell me, "Joey, nobody's more worthy than you, and everyone's your equal." And that was I learned that no one's looking for a handout. All anybody wants is a fair shot at making, and they deserve a fair shot. My dad had a saying. He said, "Joey, a job's about a lot more than a paycheck. It's about your dignity. It's about respect. It's about being able to look your kid in the eye and say, 'Honey, it's going to be okay,' and mean it." You know, people like Donald Trump learned very different lessons. He learned the best way to get rich is inherited. Not a bad way. He learned that paying taxes was something people who work for a living did, not him. He learned that telling people you're fired was something to laugh about. I guess that's how you look at the world when you're in Park Avenue or Mar-a-Lago. But if you grew up in a place like Scranton, nobody handed you anything. You paid your taxes. You made sure being told you're fired wasn't entertainment. It was a nightmare that people worried about. And all I knew about the people like Trump who looked down on us were the people that haven't changed. They wouldn't welcome us in their homes and their clubs. Folks, where we come from matters. When I look at the economy, I don't see it through the eyes of Mar-a-Lago. I see it through the eyes of Scranton, and that's not hyperbole. That's a fact. Where honesty and decency matter. Where faith matters. Where family is everything. Where we grew up, knowing in our homes that Wall Street didn't build this country, the middle class built this country, and unions built the middle class. We know the best way to build an economy is from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down, because when you do that, the poor have a ladder up, the middle class does well, and the wealthy still do very well. We all do well. There's a stark contrast from my opponent. He looks at the economy from Mar-a-Lago, where he and his rich friends embraced the failed trickle-down policies that have failed working families for more than 40 years. Scranton values or Mar-a-Lago values? These are the competing visions for our economy, and they raise questions of fundamental fairness to the heart of this campaign that I want to talk to you about a little bit today. Folks, does anybody really think the present tax code is fair? Raise your hand if you think it's fair. I'm not joking. Well, neither do I. I'm a capitalist. If you're able to go out and make $1 million, fine. That's okay. But just make sure you pay your fair share in taxes.
President Joe Biden campaigning in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Wall Street today, the Dow up 63, NASDAQ down 19, S&P down 10. Story from Fox Business, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell on Tuesday said it is likely that inflation will take longer than expected to reach the central bank's 2% target, casting fresh doubt on when policymakers may cut interest rates this year. In a story from the Washington Post, Attorney General Merrick Garland told lawmakers on Tuesday that President Joe Biden has shown no signs of cognitive impairment while defending Biden's ability to serve as commander-in-chief. Garland, appearing before a House committee overseeing the funding for the Justice Department, was answering questions on the report from Special Counsel Robert Hur about Biden's handling of classified material. Hur's report concluded in no criminal charges, yet made some observations about Biden's mental state that infuriated the Democratic president and his aides. The Attorney General, while stressing that he was not commenting on the specifics of Hur's analysis, said that based on his own observations while interacting with Biden, he has complete confidence in the president when it comes to questions about his mental fitness. That was from the Washington Post. Here's part of the hearing. The Attorney General Merrick Garland getting questions from Congressman Ben Klein, Republican from Virginia.
I appreciate you making the report of Special Counsel Robert Hur public, as was done historically with every other special counsel. Did you review the report prior to its release?
Before I released it, yes. I read it before I released it, yes.
Did you approve of the recommendation? Obviously, you approved of the recommendations because you have it within your power to prosecute, correct?
I'm not going to comment or editorialize on the special counsel's report. I promised I would release it. I did release it. The report speaks for itself. The special counsel sat for something like 5 hours worth of testimony on the subject, and any question about results he reached could have been asked.
So you won't say whether you concur with the conclusions?
I will say, as I said at the time it was released, that I was not going to editorialize or comment on the report. I think that's inappropriate for an attorney general.
So you won't agree that Biden would have come across to a jury as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory?
I've said before, and I'll say again with respect to the report, that it's improper for the Attorney General to editorialize.
You've talked about
I take that separately from the question you're asking, and ask if you're asking me about my own observations about the president.
No, you've testified to that fact, and I heard you the first time.
I have confidence in the president.
Have you ever seen evidence of impairment in your meetings with the president?
I'm sorry. I testified, and I'll repeat again what I just said.
Well, that's different than my question.
Well, I have seen the president effectively guide the members of the department, of his cabinet, and his military.
But you won't say you've ever seen any impairment on his part?
The president has no impairment. The president—
You've never seen any?
I don't know how many ways I can say this.
Okay.
I have complete confidence in the president, and I reject your characterization.
Okay.
Attorney General Merrick Garland being questioned by Congressman Ben Klein, Republican from Virginia, at today's Appropriations Committee hearing. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter, Word for Word, and you'll get the stories making headlines in Washington sent to your inbox every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night.